My guest today on Marketing Mambo has a saying, and that is, where there's mystery, there's margin. And though I had never heard that saying before, I absolutely love it. So you're really going to enjoy this conversation with Valentina Bourbon, who is the founder of The Banter Agency. She is joining us from Australia. She's going to share some of her experiences of what it was like moving from large agencies to partnering in a couple of small agencies, and then finally starting her own agency. Val has been very thoughtful about how she structured her business, and listeners are going to learn not only from her fantastic marketing experience, but also her insights as a business owner and working mom. She sees business not only as a way to generate revenue, but as a way to give back to her community. So now, without further ado, let the mambo begin. Welcome to Marketing Mambo with your host, Terry McDougall. It's the fun and fast podcast where we cha-cha-chat with marketing movers and shakers from around the globe. Hey, everybody. It's Terry McDougall with another episode of Marketing Mambo. And I am so pleased to welcome to the show today, Valentina Bourbon. She is the CEO of Banter Group. It's a can-do marketing agency. She is hailing to us today from Australia. So welcome, Valentina. How are you today?
Thank you, Terry. I'm very, very well, actually. It's a dreary day in the Highlands, but I think everyone's dealing with extra rain at the moment.
Yeah, especially our friends down in Florida here in the US. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about where you're calling in from.
So my agency and where I live is positioned halfway between Sydney and Canberra on the east coast of Australia. And so we're in what we call a small regional town, but really a stone's throw from Sydney and Canberra. We're a population of 50,000 people and my agency's 18 people strong. So we've managed to grow quite a decent sized business in what looks like a very small town.
Well, tell us a bit more about the Banter Group and what do you all specialize in?
Yeah, so when you said can do marketing agency, I think that's quite different to the word full service. I've rarely met an agency that does a full service of everything. And our approach is to say we can do everything until we prove that we can't. And if we're not really skilled and set up to do something that we're being asked to, we'll find the right partner rather than make a mess of the job. So we're quite transparent and honest in the way that we work. And so my agency does everything from creating marketing strategies, designing brand new businesses and brands, to marketing deliverables. It could be anything from creating social media plans and managing profiles for clients. It could be graphic design, making videos. It's really everything in between with marketing and building websites, which is still a huge part of our digital world and how we communicate our businesses. So our team is multifaceted across all of those disciplines. And we do that all in our regional town. So we don't typically offshore any of our work. We have a real physical office with real physical humans in it, which is really important in a regional center.
Yeah. And how long has your agency been around?
So we turn 5 in 2 days' time. So
oh my gosh, yeah, this is the birthday podcast.
It is. It really is. It was a good idea on a long weekend 5 years ago. And I guess I've had a long-standing history in marketing and I moved to this region mostly for my family's purposes. And I have a daughter with special needs, so I needed to settle her into a young and close community. And sort of resigned myself from working in a marketing role. And as I walked around town and tried to make friends, I also met lots of business owners who were doing really terrible things with their marketing. And I just thought, wow, you just shouldn't spend your money like that. Or there's 10 other things I'd do before I'd put my money into what you're doing. So I found myself offering just a little bit of advice and then, I'll help you out this little bit. And then 2 years later, I registered a business and went, something in this. I'll see how far it goes. You know, I'm not really ready to run another agency, but I just can't watch these business owners who are mums and dads too, just struggling particularly in digital, and digital's been a huge part of my background. So, you know, there's a lot of complexity and big buzzwords in digital, and no one really knows what some of them mean, and where there's mystery, there's margin. Mm. And so I was just trying to help them make better decisions. And within 8 months of registering Banter, I had 8 employees.
Oh, and, wow. Wow. Yeah. That really took off. There was a need there.
There really was. And I didn't think there was as big a need. And I guess part of what I stood for was I've come from the big agency world, and I know what that means. And for working mums, that means you can't really continue working. Certainly, unfortunately, yeah. I found myself even redundant in my own agency when I had my first child. And so I thought, I can do this differently. I can still work. I'm still capable. What can I create that allows me to still contribute to a meaningful work life and still have a family life at the same time? And so that's what I set up Banter to do, is if I'm going to hire someone, I'm going to offer them the flexibility that I know that they're going to need. Most marketers are women. That's not a gender bias. That's mm-hmm. just reality.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's what happened. 8 months and 8 employees. 5 years and 18, please.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. Well, you know, it's funny, before I hit record, I was just saying I've been an executive coach for about 5.5 years after having a 30-year career in marketing, working in corporations. And it is a funny thing how once marketing gets in your blood, it never goes away, as much as you think, right? Like, oh, you thought, oh, I'm going to move to this getaway town and yeah. start this new life. And, you know, no, it's an addiction, right? That's part of why I started the podcast, because I just love marketing and I love talking to marketers.
You're absolutely right.
I'm so interested, though, I mean, in what you were just touching on, the challenges of being a woman in business, and particularly a parent, a mother working in business. I mean, are there other things that you'd like to share? I mean, I love what you were saying about the fact that you're being thoughtful about what you offer to your employees. And my guess is that you're able to attract a lot of great talent and probably retain them because they know that you're working with them. And I'm sure the loyalty is there because they know you care.
You're so right. I've been very fortunate. And my longest standing employee actually is my creative director. And when we met at a small cafe and saying to her, you know, we were 6 weeks old and I don't have the on the tools design capability. I'm a great mm-hmm. strategic marketer. Mm-hmm. I've been a media buyer. I can't design to save my life. I can critique design. I can tell you what it should do. I can't create it. And saying to her, look, I don't know how much design work we'll have. You know, you've come from 9MSN, you know, the big days of digital when it started, and you've worked on Optus, huge telecommunications organization. I'm thinking, can you design a MailChimp template for a newsletter?
Yeah.
No, I'm thinking some small scale, small business
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've got these huge skills. Do you really want to do this? And she was hungry for a startup environment to really contribute to great solutions. And she celebrates her 5-year anniversary 6 weeks after Banter's anniversary. So it's been a really beautiful ride to see how I have retained my talent. I recently looked back at my employee list, and out of everyone that's moved on, only one person has moved on for a different role. Everybody else moved on for life experience or for, you know, some of my favorites were someone working in social media who went into interior design and realized mm-hmm. they needed to follow their heart. Okay. Mm-hmm. Another lady thought she could really do account management, and actually she worked out it's a tough role to deal with clients a lot of the time. And she's a fantastic artist, as in painter. And how can you begrudge someone finding what they love in life? I love marketing. I get it. So, yeah, I have managed to attract fantastic talent. There's been a huge surge, especially off the back of COVID, of people moving out of the cities. They've got terrific skills, and marketing mums. You know, we find ourselves in these amazing career-driven roles before families, and then we find ourselves not able to juggle the demands of that mm-hmm. type of environment. So we still want to do what we're great at and what we love. And like you said, I can't get marketing out of my bones. My brain thinks in commercials mm-hmm, and jingles and taglines.
Yeah.
And you do that forever. So
sure. Yeah, I was imagining you walking through the town and just looking and saying, they could be doing this and they could be doing this. Because I find myself doing that, you know, critiquing even television advertising. And why did they do that?
Exactly.
So interesting. Well, so according to the brief that I was sent, that you've got a story about going into business with friends that you could share with us. And I'm kind of curious about this, but so I'm going to open the floor and let you tell the story.
Oh, great. Well, there's kind of two stories. The first time I left big agency, I actually was the general client services director of an agency. I took on a general manager role, and the MD and I broke away and created our own agency. Admittedly, I was quite young. I had just had my first child. He was funding that organization and gave me a small percentage share to come and join him. What I worked out very quickly is our shareholders' agreement was not balanced. He had a majority share. Understandably, he was bankrolling the whole thing. But there was an expectation that I was going to contribute 50% of the energy and 50% of the workflow and 50% of the responsibility for 10% of the organization.
Yeah.
And as I worked out also very quickly, there was a huge disparity between our salaries that we were taking. So not only was I undervalued from a financial reward, I was undervalued from a shareholder's reward, except I was being held to account for 50% of its success. Mm-hmm. When I tried to buy into that organization, I was prepared to give more of my own hard-earned cash to say, I want in, I want equality. I was denied that. Mm. And at that very moment, 5 years into that whole process, it became very clear to me that I am never going to be an equal partner in this business. And I'm still being held to account for all of the equal everything I'm out. Mm-hmm. And so I left. And that was actually the catalyst for moving regionally. It was a big mental health breakdown attached to other things as well, but that was probably the start of it. And taking the 2-year break, I decided that I would never, ever, ever run an agency again. I'm walking away. And then someone I'd worked with for 20 years before locally here had approached me to say, look, we're starting a business. We think that there's a role for an agency. Would you consider running the agency side? We could feed work to each other. This is how we could see it working. And we decided we'd go into it in a partnership. Now, there were three of us and the other two people were married. We knew each other from a work life 20 years ago. I love them. Please don't get me wrong. Their friendship to me was very, very important, still is. And I remember sitting at the back table on our deck making this decision and agreeing that if something goes wrong, I'm pulling the plug on the company because I want the friendship. I don't want to destroy our friendship over work. I saw that happen in my previous partnership and I don't want that. What I learned from that, you have to have very, very clear roles of expectation. Otherwise, you're going to let each other down. And that's exactly what happened. Within 6 weeks, it was really obvious. I was working 5 days a week. My colleagues were maybe giving me a day in the week, maybe 2 hours here, 2 hours there. I can do this little job. But they weren't helping me create and run a business. And I came to that realization very quickly and I made the decision to address it. Bang on, this is what's happening. This is how I'm feeling. It's going sour already. And I could understand why. They too were creating a different business and they were heavily invested in its success and weren't able to stretch themselves across two organizations. I get it. Having the most upfront conversation with them and saying, this is how I feel and I'm out if this is how it's going to go. And if I'm out, because we'd already started working with clients, will you continue what we've started? And the answer was no. Mm. And I couldn't, just not in my bones, to start something and then dump it, especially when there were client relationships involved. And so I negotiated over that time within 6 months. I want to take on what we've created. And let's call it a day. Let's not get further into this. And it ended very well. I have to admit, the process was heart-wrenching. I was absolutely chewing myself up. So were they. They felt that they had let me down. I didn't know how to tell them that I was so let down by what's happening. We drank a lot of drinks at the pub one night. We smoked half a packet of cigarettes between us, and we don't even smoke. That's the sort of stress we were under. And then we just said it, you know, please let's be friends in this, put the business aside, and it ended quite well. And we're still great friends. We still feed each other different work in the right responsibilities. But I have learned that the hardest way possible. I trust these people implicitly. They're excellent people. They're excellent business people. It was putting the human element over the top. They're not doing this to hurt me. They're not doing this for a personal gain. They're simply juggling in the same way I am, and we can't make it work.
Yeah, yeah.
It all came down to that expectation. I expected that if I'm working 5 days a week, that I want someone else to work 5 days a week.
Sure. Yeah, you know, I'm wondering, I mean, it was interesting, the first story of you working with that gent who had the 90% stake in the business. I'm wondering how much of that was driven by you being young and not knowing what you should ask for, and maybe even feeling like, oh, how lucky I am that he wants to partner with me.
You are bang on correct. Within about the third year, I worked out very quickly that if I'm not going to be able to increase my shareholding to an equality, then I'm going to increase my salary to one. Because the very first lesson out of that inexperience was that 50% of zero profit share is zero.
Yeah.
Yep. So if we're not going to be divvying up anything, then the shareholding actually meant nothing at all. And I worked that out quickly too. When I left the business, I tried to cash in on my 10%. And it's interesting how people value an organization at that point.
Yes, I've heard that. Yeah. I actually have heard that story from other minority partners and agencies. That's a tough one.
It is. And I chose to walk away rather than take that to court. So that was part of the mental health decision. Am I really going to do this for money? And I'm not driven financially. I'm driven by so many other things. Mm, yeah. And that was the decision. I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to put it down to life experience. I've definitely learned that lesson. But I did manage to, in year three, year four, put my salary on equal level. And that's what made it more rewarding. At least if I'm going to do half the work and we're going to get paid the same. So that helped.
Well, so it sounds like that was a very valuable lesson in speaking up for yourself. I mean, learning some hard lessons, right? That sometimes we trust people that, you know, because we have a relationship, we trust that they're going to have our best interest at heart. And sometimes it isn't necessarily that they're meaning to take advantage, but if we don't look out for ourselves, and then nobody's going to look out for us as well as we look out for ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Terry, to add to that, I had a mentor that I called on, I hadn't spoken to in years, to say, am I delusional? This is how I see it. Is no one else seeing this? How could he do this to me? Actually, he was quite fine about it. And if it wasn't for somebody that I really trusted to say, you're not delusional, you're being had, and fight for it. You've got a right to fight for it. I think women go through imposter syndrome for most of their life, that I'm not worthy. I'm not as good as I think I am. And find that difficult to stand up for themselves. And part of that has been, you know, is it age appropriate to feel like you can say that at 32? Probably not. I'm not really ego-driven either. So I'm not going to be that good. I can't possibly be. It takes a huge amount of confidence building in your own self to say, I am actually good at this and I am worthy.
Yeah, there was a reason why he wanted you in the business. He was like, she's smart and she's hardworking and she's talented. I'm going to lure her in with 10% of nothing and a small salary, and we're going to be really successful.
and testament to what happened 10 years ago, we're still friends. We still meet up. He commends me on the success of Banter Group all the time. And he also says, I'm not surprised. So
yeah, no, of course, because he saw your talent. He saw your talent, right?
That's right. And there's part of me that thinks, didn't you want this for us? We could have had this together, but you didn't. And
well, you know, it's interesting because I do think, and I mean, it's as a coach, I coach people very often on imposter syndrome, and I mean, men have it too, but You see it more commonly with women. And I think a lot of times we just feel like, oh, well, I feel so lucky to be at the table, you know, rather than, and I think that sometimes people will say, well, I guess she's okay with this if she's not fighting for more. And then we're saying like, oh, well, am I allowed to fight for more?
That's right.
You know, there's a bit of a misunderstanding. I think sometimes if someone feels like, oh, well, I'm going to fight for everything I can get. And then they're, the other side of that equation is somebody that's like, oh, okay, well, if you think this is all I'm worth, I'm willing to take it.
That's so right. And I feel like I should have recognized all the signs so much sooner. I remember being much younger in my early 20s and not receiving a salary that was in line with what I was doing. And I kept thinking, when I resigned and they tried desperately to hold on to me and throwing money at me in every direction, I'm like, if you thought I was worth it, why wouldn't you have just paid me that in the first place?
Yeah, exactly.
And,
you know,
why didn't I put those lessons together? It's all part of your own life stage, really. I think we all wish we had the same knowledge when we've got wisdom behind us. We just, you've got to earn it in many ways.
And yeah, it can be painful, but we remember those lessons when we learn it the hard way. So how did you take those experiences, you know, how did that figure into the way that you structured the business that you run now, Banter?
Yeah, so I put all of those learnings into, now I'm the boss of my own domain. There's nobody else. You've got to back yourself, make the decisions that you would make if you don't have that partner that's forcing me to make bad decisions. So actually, I'm still learning even as my own boss. I'm never going to say I'm going to stop learning. But I put people on my team with the right salary in line with their experience from the beginning. That's a tough thing to do in a regional town. Salaries are very different. Client budgets are very different. But we offer the work environment. Money is one thing, yes, but the leadership, the training, the respect. Respect is a big thing. The flexibility, the understanding that comes with modern life. So having, out of 18 of us, we only have 3 men in the company. 2 of them, one's a designer and one's a tech head. The rest are the marketers and they're the women. And they have young families, anything from, you know, a 3-4-year-old to 15-16-year-olds. And that means that, well, we're in school holiday mode at the moment. I lose half my team to school holiday because their kids are sitting at home on their own. We can't leave our kids on their own.
Right.
So having kids firstly in the workplace when mums are trying to just juggle either a drop-off, I'm going straight from this podcast so that you understand, to pick up my daughter to drive her to an art lesson while I'm taking a phone call with a CEO of another company.
We do what we have to do, right?
We do what we have to do and not begrudging someone to do that. So even that, you know, we've had team members have to leave the office. Their street was on fire in the bushfires. Wow. People are being evacuated. We have to get animals out. We have to do life. And it's not begrudging them for that. It's not making them stay back late, work late. It's actually just saying you're a human being trying to do all the things and life's just not worth the burnout. So do what you got to do.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I coach a lot of people in the big agencies, big advertising agencies, and that is not the attitude typically. It's really that they're like, I actually was just talking to one of my clients yesterday and he was talking about one of the people on his team taking an art class in the evening that started at 6:30. And he said, well, you know, I'm online until between 6:30 and 8:00. And that's when she's at her class. And I was, and he said, and he admitted that, okay, that is after the end of the workday officially, but you know, it just, it's such a grinding profession that, you know, can't be done in 40 hours a week.
And I'm so sorry to hear that that mentality still happens.
I know.
If I leave here at 6:00 at night and if there is one staff member, I'm standing at their desk like, what are you still
doing?
Okay,
come on, I'm turning out the lights.
That's right. Everyone's got the key. Everyone's got the right to come and go as they please. And I know how I like to work. And sometimes it is, well, most of the time it is at night. I find a peace in that. That's not what I expect of my team. I'm the leader of this business. I don't expect them to do that.
Right.
And actually, if someone is working at 8:00 at night, my question is, what are we doing wrong? Why haven't we got enough resourcing? Because what those big agencies are doing is squeezing every bit of profitability out of their team for their own benefit and wealth.
Yes.
When Banter makes money, it goes back to better parties, more salary, more people. I don't have a big bank account. I don't want a big bank account.
Yeah.
I want us to be sustainable, yes. I don't want us to go backwards. I have zero loans for the business. We have been cash flow positive within 6 months of bootstrapping the company. My biggest expense are beautiful new Macs for people to work on.
Oh, nice.
And salaries. You know, and that's the big difference is I'm not driven for profit for my own benefit. I'm driven for the business to create a sustainable workplace in a regional environment. We work here, we spend our money here, our regional communities thrive. I can't get that and deliver that by burning my people out and expecting them to be online at 8 o'clock at night. If someone responds to me at 8 o'clock, I'm texting them to say, get off.
Why are you responding to this at 8 o'clock at night?
I might work at 8 o'clock at night. You're not working.
So one of the things I was really intrigued about in the brief was why marketing is full of snake oil salesmen. I want to hear your thoughts on this because I've not worked in marketing for a long time. So I think I understand what you're saying there, but I want to hear it from you, Val.
Well, what I have learned is, and I mentioned this when we first spoke, where there's mystery, there's margin. And particularly with digital, what I find is, and I experienced this even for Banter Group, is the promise that comes from marketing. Oh, I can get you on page one of Google. It's like, yep. Now, Google gets you on page one of Google, and there's 200 ranking factors that makes up that decision, and there's 10 positions on page one of Google. So thank you to the 50 or so inquiries that I receive as Banter every single week promising me page one of Google. And I laugh. I'm on page one of Google for my services. I can see the snake oil. I can see the confusion for businesses. They don't know what they're signing up to. It feels like that's exactly what they want, but they don't understand the process of why and how that happens. And so when people say, I can guarantee that, the only person that can guarantee that is Google. And the moment they change their algorithm, I've lost control of that decision. Mm-hmm. But businesses don't know that. So they sign up to this $1,000 a month SEO package. That's probably my favorite snake oil. And they don't even know what they're getting for it. They don't know what's happening. They don't know what action is taking place. And they certainly don't know what result they have. They just pay someone. And that's how they brief me. I'm not really sure. I pay this guy. And I just think, oh, you poor people, give me $1,000 a month. Do you know how many earrings I can buy for $1,000 a month? And they're just none the wiser. And Google Ads is another great bucket of money to throw into. If you're not really sure about what you're doing, it's the easiest way to spend money. Facebook ads are the same. Instagram sponsored ads are the same. It's easy to set up. Of course it is. The platforms make it very easy to give your money to and not very easy to understand the true result of what you're doing. So unfortunately, a lot of what I spend my time doing is explaining to people why perhaps what they're doing isn't working, and to refocus on the basic behaviors of consumers. How do we act when I have a need or if I don't have a need? How do I become inspired? How do I become aware of something that I need when I don't know that that's something I do need? And that's where you start with marketing. So sometimes for a business, you know, a lot of people will say to me, I really need to improve my website. And I talk to them about, why do they think their website is going to be the be-all and end-all? Mm-hmm. It is absolutely still crucial. It's a validation point.
Right.
But most of the time, their discoverability is happening somewhere else.
Right.
So how do we discover you in the first place to then get to your website? And so we start the process by saying, how do your customers even find you? And isn't it funny when some people, most people respond with, oh, I'm a referral-based business. I went, okay, this is good. Referral is probably the best marketing tool that you have. The first thing that someone does on a referral is Googles their way to you to look at your website to validate what they've heard is good. Some people will do that on a website. Some people do that on social media. And then they look at you and go, oh, and are people using Instagram? I mean, I don't think my people use Instagram. Yeah, look, 1 billion people use Instagram. Now, are we really going to pretend that this isn't happening? You know, I have different conversations about TikTok. I giggle and say, does anyone even use Snapchat anymore? And if you've still got a MySpace account, I don't know who you are. And if you're floating around in, you know, a place like Second Life, you were 20 years ahead of your time for virtual reality. So I try and take the mystery out of what they say, I need marketing. Well, tell me what the problem is. It might not be marketing. Mm-hmm. You might just actually need to fix part of the process. And
right.
Let me be that customer. A lot of the time, there's simple things that actually need to happen.
Yeah.
You don't need to come at it with, I need a big TV campaign or I need a big radio campaign. Actually, radio is an interesting medium. Newspapers still have a place at the right time. So I don't profess that digital actually is an answer to everything. It's about what the customer is doing and who they are and how they behave. And that determines the best way to market a company.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think that there's a saying that, like, don't buy things that you don't understand. And I do think that people get really nervous about the fact that they don't understand digital, but they get this feeling that they need to be there for some reason. But, you know, any good marketer like you are is going to start with, well, what is it that you're trying to achieve?
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
What can you tell me about your business and how you make money? And then, you know, it's not as complicated as sometimes people try to make it, but partnering with somebody like you, I'm sure, makes it much easier.
A lot of the time it's an education role. And because I've been an educator for such a long time, when digital really started, I was running a digital certificate for marketers and creating the material and teaching it. Mm-hmm. And I realized very early on that people just don't understand a lot of the moving parts. So if you can teach them the foundation, they can actually make better marketing decisions. And that's what Banter had started with, walking into a cafe and hearing from an owner what their struggle was, and they just didn't understand. I love taking that mystery out and watching the penny drop when people go, oh my gosh, I've never had someone just explain it in a sentence that actually makes sense. And you go, yep, there it is.
Right. It's not, they're not talking over their head with a lot of jargon.
That's it. Yeah. And there's a lot of jargon.
There is a lot of jargon, even for a marketer, you know, because I really started in marketing before there was digital. You know, for some of us old school people, it's a lot of catch up. Well, Val, it has been really fantastic speaking with you, and I'd love to give you an opportunity to give us your last words of wisdom for the listeners at Marketing Mambo.
Oh, look, my biggest words of wisdom is don't get pulled into all the latest trends. Find out, how does my customer find me, think about me, consider me, influenced by me, and make sure that you're present in those places. When people search, what do they find? And is it good quality? And is it the quality that your business wants to portray? When they search, that's not just words, that's videos, that's images, that's your website, and what the process actually looks like. If you're finding it clunky, so's your customer. And if mum and dad can't work it out, neither can your customer. It's got to be easy. And it's got to portray who you are. Find out. Don't just jump into something. Just ask the right questions and find the right person to ask that question of. And, you know, Terry, I'll put it out there. You can find me online quite easily. Valentina Bourbone is a pretty unique name on the internet, I've worked out. I'm either me or a Russian porn star. Banter Group is quite easy to find as well from our marketing efforts. Drop me an email, hit me up with the one-liner to just get the right answer. And that's not a sales pitch. Let's help the world make better decisions.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'll put all your contact information in the show notes as well. Val, it has been a real pleasure having you on as a guest today.
Thank you. And it's really nice to meet you, Terry, and for giving me an opportunity to help people out there just make better marketing decisions.
Well, it was my pleasure.